So this is Blake. You guys want to do the intro? You want to be? Because I'm expecting you guys to make some contribution at some point.
Sure.
Here.
This is Dana, and with us we have
Elle.
And today we're going to do the first in what we hope is actually a featured series, which is Blake Spoils Everything. Just a little bit of background here. Blake has told me the stories of many, many movies and TV shows since I have known him. Blake also, you know, tells these stories often in a way that is more entertaining
than the source material.
And then the source material, either in the abstract or, you know, in the amount of time it would take you to actually watch it. So in that way,
I also have a tendency to play up the awesome parts and to sometimes make them as awesome as I wished they were instead of as awesome as they actually were.
The point is, you're going to like listening to Blake today tell you about Lost more than you probably will watching 7 seasons of Lost.
I'm not sure it actually is 7 seasons. Remember, I did watch it last year. So just to preface this, this won't necessarily... future issue episodes will probably be a little bit more accurate, because the way Lost works is back in 2004 and 2005, I watched seasons 1, 2, and the first half of 3 as they aired on television, like when they were new. Then my work schedule changed, and I was working on that night, and I didn't see the show again, though I did hear grumblings of, you know, what was going on in Lost as it continued to air, until last year when I got on Netflix and binge-watched the rest of the series. But that was last year, and a year is a long time in my goldfish brain, so this won't be 100% accurate, but I hope I can give you guys the gist.
6 seasons.
Yeah, I was about to say six seasons.
Seasons.
I was waiting for him to finish.
The second thing about this is that Lost is a show that I certainly enjoyed a lot of parts of, but I wouldn't say I enjoyed it as a whole. So I wouldn't describe myself as a fan, and I might be somewhat uncharitable. I think a big part of this podcast is going to be calling out the oftentimes hilarious writing snafus of the show. Because the fact of the matter is, they present a mosaic to the audience from the very first episode of, look at all these cool secrets that we're going to reveal slowly as the story goes on. And it makes you feel like there's some already complete story that we're just getting to see pieces of the picture here and pieces of the picture there. It becomes very apparent by season 5 that the series, that hidden mosaic picture is being written as they go. And they are forgetting some things that they had done earlier. And, oh crap, we have to come up with an explanation for this. And then sometimes just not even bothering coming up with an explanation for things. And so, yeah. So the story starts with an airplane full of people traveling from Sydney, Australia to Los Angeles, California. And they crash in the ocean and wash up on a beach along with some pieces of their plane. There's a very focus group generated cast of characters, and I'm not necessarily complaining about that. I found the protagonist mostly likable. We have our trinity of main characters in Jack, Kate, and Sawyer. Jack is a spinal surgeon. Kate is a what is she? She's an escaped convict, and Sawyer is a con man, a world traveling con man. And so we have the good boy, who will also be our leader in Jack the Doctor, and the bad boy with the heart of gold, who can be redeemed over the course of his myth arc in our Sawyer, and the woman who gets to choose between them in order to determine which way is the right way in Kate. And that's sort of, you know, that strikes me as a very focus grouped way to start a show. And so they crash on this island. It's a tropical island in the South Pacific. And at first, yeah, I mean, all the characters, there's a bunch of other characters I'll get into as they become relevant or stop becoming relevant. But they think, okay, we're on this island now and we need to, we'll just sit tight and a rescue team will be coming. Then they, like, journey into the woods and they, oh, right, I suppose I should mention that at this point, the monster, the robot Tyrannosaurus Rex, as we called it after the first episode. So they're camped out on the beach. Night falls. Like, they're illuminated by the burning jet wreckage. A bunch of people have died horribly. Only 40-some-odd people survived the crash, I think. Mm-hmm. And most of them, you know, enough that they can have some nameless background NPCs that if they need to call somebody up to be in the main cast, they can be like, oh crap, we need a character to do this job. But not so many that it feels like an innumerable number of people landed, or for example, they could split off into multiple groups and each group would be fine. But when night falls, they hear this terrifying mechanical noise come from the jungle and see, like, the trees waving around and stuff. And it basically sounds like a rusty robot clombering around.
Is this the smoke monster I've heard so much about?
Yes.
Okay.
Though
it sounds like a rusty robot?
In the first episode, it's an extra rusty robot. A lot of clanking. But then there's, like, some monster noises in there. Like, a thing that sounds like the Tyrannosaurus Rex roar from Jurassic Park. This is actually a really important part of what I feel like is just really demonstrative of what about the show could have been done better. Mm-hmm. So the point is, we're like, okay, so some kind of mysterious monster lives on this island. In the, I want to say the second episode, they go into the jungle and they find the cockpit hanging from a tree, and one of the pilots is still barely alive. And they, like, climb up the tree, and they crawl into the cockpit, and they talk to the pilot, and he's played by that slightly overweight gentleman who always plays a commercial airline pilot. I don't know the actor's name, but you could probably find him in it, and his cast credits will say pilot, 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 pilot. Not always in pilots. Anyway, and he tells them that, oh no, we're like hilariously off course. Nobody's ever going to find us because we're like 2,000 goddamn miles off of our course for reasons. I don't know. I think he said their instruments went wacky and then they tried to turn around, but then they ended up instead like getting caught in a storm and crashing on this island. He doesn't at all say anything that alludes to the ultimate cause of the plane crash, which I think is revealed in season 3 or 4. Yeah, I guess it's season 3. Hey, it's fuzzy. And then suddenly, we hear the scary robot T-Rex noise. And the characters, like, hide quivering inside the cockpit. And then the pilot, like, climbs up and sticks his head out the broken windshield of the plane. And then his, you know, legs start wiggling around in the manner that you do when your head has been bit by a T-Rex and gets pulled out. And they never, I'm not sure they find his body. They might find, like, a shoe or something, but basically he's just gone. So we're like, okay, so now we know it's a giant monster. So then they have to, like, build shelter and find a source of clean water and figure out how to hunt for food. Handily, they've got a guy on the ship who can totally just do all these things. He's, like, festooned with knives, and his name is John Locke. Just let that sink in for a minute. And he is like, oh no, I'm the boss of hunting.
Well, I can look this up.
Yeah, I don't remember actually whether Locke, I always remembered as Locke and Hobbes. And one of them said man is good and the other said man is bad.
I totally know what you're talking about now.
Whatever. The point is that, in a writing blunt instrument way, named one of the characters after a famous philosopher and tried to use him to illustrate a point about whether people were good or bad. But, so he goes out and like skewers wild boars with his knives and that's what they eat. And so, you know, they sort of stabilize the situation. But then they start discovering all kinds of mysterious stuff about the island. Like, some of the characters find in the woods a hatch, like to a bunker, that has 6 numbers written across it. An important thing about the storytelling style of Lost is that you have what's happening on the island, punctuated by scenes of the characters' lives from before they got on the plane. The transition between these scenes is always the sound of your ears popping from the pressure of a plane lifting off, or the pressure of a plane changing altitude. So they make this like noise, and then it cuts to the past. It cuts to a flashback. And so they kind of, this was actually one of the best, this is why the series was so popular right off the bat, because they gave us all these characters that seemed very interesting, and then they slowly revealed little pieces of their backstory to us. So we had like this big fat guy who everybody called Hurley, who, whose real name was Hugo, but who, was like very zen. And, had some weird thing going on in his past with like, where he won the lottery, but his lottery money was cursed. So he was like a rich guy that had bought his favorite fast food chain from it with his lottery winnings, but then didn't, but then didn't want to be a millionaire anymore. And we have the rock star with a heroin addiction who was like, okay, well, actually, and I'm not even sure it was heroin. He had a brown dust in a bag, but he didn't seem to need to melt it to take it. So it was something that he could snuff, but it was brown, so it wasn't cocaine. So I think it was like generic TV series drug?
Yeah.
And he's played by, I don't know, his character's name is Charlie. He's played by the actor who played Mary in the Lord of the Rings trilogy. Mary Attic Brandybuck.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. He was really good. And so we have the girl who was pregnant, the pregnant girl on the plane. So, like, she's got, I think she later went on to have a pretty good career in, I want to say, True Blood or something. Anyway, so then we're like, oh boy, we're gonna get that great childbirth drama in the wilderness later in this show. They discover this hatch in the woods. So they're like, okay, so there's actually some civilization on this island. And as the series goes on, we discover more things about the tortured past of all the characters, but we also discover more things about the island itself, and it seems like there's some kind of mysterious thing going on here. Eventually they start getting harried by what seem like indigenous residents to the island who are super gung-ho about kidnapping the pregnant woman for reasons we don't understand.
So they dress like natives or they dress like people?
We don't even see them for the first, like, season, maybe even the first two seasons. They also are, like, trying to kidnap. I think there's also another child in the group that they're trying to kidnap. And you know, so we're led to believe that the people already on the island, who end up being referred to as the Others, are people who were maybe stranded here a long, long time ago and have, you know, just sort of been living out their days.
Mm-hmm.
But needless to say, it gets much more interesting than that. So I'm going to skip ahead, like, a couple of seasons now. Eventually they, like, blast their way into the hatch and they find this, like, 1970s era bunker where there's a guy who has to put those six numbers that are on the hatch. Also, the six numbers that Hurley used to win the lottery. Also, six numbers that have been playing in a loop on a radio tower, from a radio tower somewhere on the island for the last 50 years.
Hmm.
And I think they pop up in a variety of other places. I think they were the seat numbers of the primary cast on the plane. And then much later in the series, we learned that they're all assigned these numbers by some kind of weird spiritual god entity. It's very metaphysical, but we'll get into that in a little bit. But the point is that this guy has to type these numbers into a computer and hit enter every 108 minutes or something like that, 102 minutes, or else some unknown disaster will occur, and we're not sure what exactly that disaster is.
So how do they blast their way into a bunker?
They find dynamite on an old wrecked ship.
Okay.
Like a colonial era ship.
Okay.
How
did the other guy get down here? The guy who was in the bunker.
He was already there.
No, but like, how long has he been there?
He had only been down there a few years, actually.
So he, like, shipwrecked.
He wrecked on the island as well.
How did he get into the bunker?
He was invited into the bunker by the previous, resident, who then basically escaped to leave him with the task of having to push the button. He didn't know why he had to do it, but he was told that the world would end if he didn't. We later learn that if you don't push the button, see, there's like a big ticker on the wall, like one of those old-fashioned flip panel tickers that ticks down the seconds. We learn that if you don't push the button, the ticker flips over into red panels instead of black panels with white numbers. It flips over to red panels with black Egyptian hieroglyph symbols on them. And the world starts shaking and lights start flashing and things start to get scary. And apparently a huge magnet pulls planes out of the sky because that's what crashed their plane. Was the guy not pushing the button.
Really?
Yeah. But then he pushed the button. It's okay, it was destiny. It was destiny that had to bring them all there. So then he pushed the button, and then everything went back to normal again. Later in one of the, I think maybe at the end of season 2, they don't push the button, but then they, like, crawl around underneath, in, like, the crawl space underneath the bunker and turn two keys simultaneously to dump a bunch of concrete on the mysterious thing behind the wall that the machine is hooked up to that they have to feed the numbers to. They never explain what that is. Only that it's some kind of singularity or something like that. But they never really tell us what it is. And the reason why is because they always plan to, but ended up writing all kinds of features and qualities to it that they couldn't find a story to tie together. I haven't forgotten about the robot dinosaur It just wasn't coming up.
Okay.
They just conveniently forgot about the robot dinosaur for like a season and a half. Then it like sweeps in and catches a guy, and we finally get to see what it looks like, and it's a plume of smoke that makes that funny like machine noise. But then it turns out like it like wraps around a guy's ankle and picks him up and like smacks him against the ground until he dies. So we're like, okay, well, apparently our robot dinosaur is some kind of sentient cloud of smoke.
Does it at least, like, consume the bodies? So that there's a reason, an explanation for not finding the pilot's body?
Nope. It just took him somewhere else. They just didn't find it. So, when the plot starts to pull together, the part of the story that I think was clear was already happening is down in this bunker, you can watch videos from the Dharma Initiative, where this guy who was recording these videos in, like, the 70s explains to you, you have to push this button. It's important, but doesn't actually explain why. It's very 70s PSA kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But apparently the island is, like, dotted with installations set up by this mysterious Dharma Initiative. And, like, later they find another bunker that has all these security cameras wired in to spy on all the other bunkers, including the bunker where people push the button. And in there, there's a video where there's like, we've got this great social experiment going on where we're forcing people to push this button and telling them the world will end if they don't. We want you to write down in these journals what they're doing all day, every day, and then roll them up and put them in this air tube. It's like at the bank.
Uh-huh.
And then they follow the air tube and it's just jettisoning them into a landfill.
What the fuck? This is like that LARP I played. Go ahead.
It turns out that the others, like, we're meant to believe that the others, you know, like, at first, they have, a, like, tattered clothes. Like, one guy has, like, this big beard. At some point, though, he, like, pulls the beard off and it's a false beard, and they actually just have, like, tattered clothes they keep in, like, lockers so that they can dress as though they have been marooned on the island. But they actually have, like, electricity and running water and, like, a little suburban neighborhood kind of village on one side of the island, because they're the people that were set up there by the Dharma Institute. Or so we were led to believe. Eventually, all of these, like, cascading plot lines where they're like, oh crap, we gotta push the button because there's a singularity, and there's the others, and they're protecting something on the island, but we're not sure what. Like, it seems like there's some kind of mystical thing on this island that they need to keep other people from coming to, and then we're trying to be like, okay, why does everything crash here? But so there's some strange quality to the island. We meet a guy named Linus, Benjamin Linus, who is the leader of the others, and he seems like he's like the master schemer. The first time he's introduced, he has represented himself as someone who has just crashed in a balloon accident. Like, he was a hot air ballooner going around the world, and they like torture him. Oh yeah, one of the members of the cast, the token Middle Easterner, because this was, of course, like during the Iraq and Afghan wars. So we had to have a character. It would be really cool to have a character who was like, oh, we'll make a guy who was actually in the Republican Guard during Operation Desert Storm. And his name was Saeed. And that actor really hit it out of the park. He was one of my favorite characters on there. But his job in the Republican Guard was he was a torturer. That was like all he did. So they're like, okay, when we, you know, find locals that we need to extract information from, we'll have Saeed torture them. And he does! So, stereotype reinforced, yeah! He's super cool as a cucumber about it, though, and has this absolutely charming British accent. Actually, I don't know if it's a British accent, but he has this charming accent. Anyway, I'm trying to remember what sends them 30 years back in time?
What?
Okay.
What?
So...
That's what he said, yes.
Right. So at a certain point, new people arrive. Like, I guess one of the characters gets some kind of message out to his old girlfriend or something, and she sends a rescue boat. And the rescue boat actually shows up, but there's some kind of force field around the island that prevents them from sailing in. So, like, they're doing all these experiments. Like, they launch a rocket. Not an exploding rocket, but they launch a rocket into the island. And, or I guess they come in on a helicopter, which crashes. Well, yeah, the helicopter crashes. And so we have some new characters introduced that came in on the helicopter. But they, like, radio the boat, and then the boat shoots a rocket, and then, like, the rocket experiences some kind of goofy time dilation and then arrives, like, 15 minutes later at the place where they were, even though to the boat they were like, the rocket's already landed. It's reporting data back to us. We can see that it's already landed. And then 15 minutes later it lands where the guy is.
Okay.
So we know there's some kind of weird time distortion membrane, and that's like, okay, that makes sense. That's why it's so hard to get off the island. And we got some new characters to be introduced, because, you know, a lot of the other characters had died. This wasn't an anybody-can-die show, but if you weren't one of the top three cast members, they quickly demonstrated, okay, yeah, you can die. Having a story that's interesting that people want to hear is no protection. They had this weird arc in, like, the first season where there were these two characters who were represented to us as brother and sister. We then learned they're only step-brother and sister, and the brother's in love with the sister, and I guess maybe they had had to relationship at one point previously, but now he, like, they're rich, and he follows her around paying her boyfriends to break up with her as she, like, goes around the world trying to get away from him. And they kill that guy. Like, that's their arc, but he just dies.
Hmm.
In, like, kind of a dumb way. Yeah, he dies while they're trying to... I don't think he's killed in the explosion when they try to blow the hatch open. But they're trying to do something to get the hatch open, and I think he dies. Oh, no, wait. Maybe they killed the girl first. I can't remember if they killed the girl or the guy first. But the point is, they both died, like... One of them died, like, three episodes later, when we all thought, oh, now, dealing with this guilt of the other person dying after the way they had been towards each other. And they're like, nope! Storyline over. We wash our hands of these characters. And I kind of got the impression it was maybe a, like, actor thing. Like, these actors want to go do something else, and so they're suddenly written out of the story. It was kind of weird, but that's all the way back in season one. Up here in season three or four, we got these new characters, and with them a means of egress from the island. And during that season... Oh, right, yes. Okay, I remember this now. So this is important. The flashbacks are flashbacks for the first couple of seasons. I can't remember if it was season three or four, but during one of those seasons, the flashbacks were very weird. And towards the end of the season, I guess it must have been the end of season three. That makes the most sense. Yeah, the end of season three, in the finale, we realize that those flashbacks aren't flashbacks. This season's flashbacks have been flash forwards to after six characters got back to the mainland from the island. They escaped, but they left everyone else behind. But they're always presented, like, all of the situations they're in are presented in a way that we could have believed this was before they even left on the plane. But it turns out, no, they escaped. So we find out they escaped, but we don't find out how, and then they have a whole season where that then culminates in them escaping. But as they escape the island, a new magical place on the island, like a bunker where they find, like, there's, like, a secret passage in the wall that goes down, like, a super long elevator to a chamber underground, and there is a, there's, like, a wheel. There's just a fucking wooden wheel sticking out of a slot in a stone wall. And if you turn the wheel, magic happens. That guy I was talking about, Benjamin, he's like, I gotta go move the island. And I think they even had a wide shot of the island winking out of existence when he turned this wheel. Then, I think when the new season picked up, had some weird stuff where they were, like, skipping around in time. Like, all the characters were, like, teleporting really far back in time, then teleporting back to the future. And because they briefly interacted with some, like, World War II legionnaires who were getting ready to test an atomic bomb on the island. And then they were attacked by weird locals who were not, like, naked Indians. You know, they were white people, but who nonetheless apparently had been on the island before, and they wanted to prevent this A-bomb from going off. And then it jumps into, like, the super-duper far past, where there was, like, a giant Anubis statue on one side of the island that could be seen from everywhere on the island. And then another guy went down into the tube and It turned out that the little wooden wheel in the wall was off its hinge and was, like, kicking around, and magic energy was, like, spewing out of the crack, and it wasn't working right, so he had to put it back up on its hinge. When he did that, everything was zapped back to normal, and all of the characters who were still on the island were in 1930. Were in the 70s. They were hurled back in time 30 years.
All right.
But this happened at the same time as the other group escaped. Right. That's it. In fact, they were on a motorboat heading out towards the boat that was docked outside the time dilation force field when the island disappeared behind them. So then, after that, season 5, we cut back and forth between the 6 survivors trying to find a way to get back onto the island, because shut up, and the people displaced back to the 30s, where the Dharma Initiative is still new, and they, like, join up with them, and it turns out that their picture was, like, hanging on the wall in one of the old buildings, because they were there all along, and a lot of this just was really retconny, where they were like, oh, this is how we're explaining this, and this is how we're explaining that. But it's all very head scratchy, and that I'm not convinced that this was what you guys were planning all along. We pretty much knew time travel was going to be a thing right at the beginning, though, because there was a part where in one of the flashbacks, Jack met the man who pushed the button, the man who was already locked in the bunker pushing the button. His name was Desmond. Incidentally, he is the character after which Desmond is named. Desmond Hall, our friend's about to be 1-year-old baby.
Wow, 1 year already.
Yeah. So.
So, why did they want to get back on the island? It would seem like if you were trapped on an island, the thing that you would want to do most would be to not be trapped on an island.
They wanted to go back to rescue their friends. They wanted to go back to bring the other people back. Also, there was some weirdness where, like, forces represented to them that they needed to go back to the island. They had a fate. A destiny on the island, and, like, Jack in particular was super ruined by not being on the island. Kate ended up taking the baby that pregnant woman had given birth to. I think his name was Aaron. They named him Aaron. And had represented him as her own, like, conceived and born during the time when they were on the island, because they were on it for a long time before they got rescued, right? And they were like celebrities because they had come back from this plane crash. Incidentally, their plane had been discovered with all of the body, with all of the passengers accounted for as dead bodies still strapped in their seats, like on the bottom of the ocean, it turns out. Yup. That's right, kids. It's a corporate conspiracy. It turns out there was some millionaire guy who was one of the soldiers back in World War II. Who was there on the island with the bomb, who had been, like, trying to possess the island for himself. And he had, like, funded the Dharma Initiative and had, when this plane went down, like, he knew that plane crashed on the island and had arranged to have this dummy plane sunk into the ocean and, like, a bunch of bodies from a mass grave in Bosnia exhumed to be put in it. And then, so there's all this conspiracy and stuff back on the mainland. One of the people who escapes is Saeed, the Iraqi torturer who, like, goes around assassinating people that are involved with the island conspiracy. Meanwhile, back in the 70s, the existing crew, like, are learning all kinds of stuff about the mysteries of the island back when it was being investigated by scientists in the 70s. And
so the island actually has inherent magical qualities.
Yes, I'm getting to that. When I get to the end, I'll when they finally in the last season have to explain everything.
Okay. Right?
Where was I? Right. Back in the 70s, they're excavating down to this anomaly. Like, they've detected it beneath the surface, and they're trying to excavate down to this anomaly, they will ultimately build the bunker around, right? And someone explains, oh, you see, here's the problem. Sometime here, they're going to drill into this anomaly, and then they're going to release some energy that they shouldn't have released, and they're going to have to build this machine in order to, like, vent that energy off every 108 minutes. If we prevent them from doing that, our plane will never crash because the machine will never be there to have to fix the energy, and therefore none of this will have ever happened. So they have this, like, I guess they get the nuclear bomb, they find the nuclear warhead from the atomic bomb from World War II, and, like, carry it there to try and use it to blow up the island. And then it gets really weird. That's the end of season 5. That's the season 5 finale when they blow up the, when they blow up the anomaly, right? Mm-hmm. So season 6 opens up, and they're in the smoking crater that had been the bunker, and the bunker is still there. But they're back in the present.
Why?
For reasons. Because we didn't figure out how to undo the time travel. Oops. The writers were like, oops. But when they blow that thing up, they have a cutaway scene to the plane, the original plane that had taken off in Sydney, landing in Los Angeles without incident. And in season 6, the cutaways, the flashbacks, are cutaways to the parallel reality where the plane landed smoothly. So they cut to what if their thing had worked and the plane had never crashed, and then cut to, no, we're still on the island. And we go back and forth between these two with the same characters, like, doing stuff on both sides.
Odd narrative
choice. I know, right? And then it's like, it turns out for a lot of them this is actually, like, bad, because the, like, there's a Korean couple who were, like, deeply estranged, and the wife was actually planning on using this flight to escape from her husband. Like, when they landed in L.A., she was going to slip away in the connecting flight from him. And then they, like, but then being on the island together, they, like, reconciled, right? So then in the alternate reality, they didn't have that reconciliation, and she tried to escape, and he had to, like, hunt her down, and then some hitmen became involved, and it was like, they, you know, the millionaire guy continued to have his friends, like, die because of the curse of his millionaire money. And, like, I guess he got back, and his family was, his family was weird. Like, his mom and his dad had gotten back together, and this was a bad thing because his dad was, like, a jerk. He was played by Cheech Marin. So what about the freaking smoke monster? Well, it turns out, I think this all happens during season 6. I might have had some inklings of it in season 5. So the others, the people that, like, protect the island, work for some guy called Jacob. They just refer to him as Jacob. And he is... They talk to him about him as though he's their leader, but then it turns out, no, really, Benjamin is their leader, because only one person is allowed to go talk to Jacob at any given time. For reasons. So he's sort of like, you know, he goes off into the wilderness and comes back with Jacob's instructions. So it's like, okay. There's a part where one of the characters holds him at gunpoint and is like, I want to see Jacob. So he takes him to this shack in the woods that notably has a circle of ash around it, like a on the floor or on the ground, and it's like this old, you know, abandoned shack. There's no power. It was never, you know, it never had electricity. It was like a handmade wood shack. And the guy walks in there and he starts talking to an empty rocking chair as though there's a person in it. And then the guy and so the guy he had brought, who happens to be Locke, is like, what is this? This is bullshit. There's nobody in that chair. You're just insane. There is no Jacob. There never was, right? Then the shack starts shaking and some kind of supernatural event happens, and Benjamin freaks out because he was just pretending he saw someone in that chair. He knew exactly where to see Jacob. It turns out later you find out that Jacob just lives somewhere else. Yeah, so that was never explained. And so then he's like, oh crap, Jacob is angry! And it never explained. Right?
So we never know who or what Jacob is?
But when we just... No, we do meet Jacob. We meet him in the last season. So we finally have this episode where, like, okay, here's the origin of everything. We got a guy. We got a woman. This is, like, gotta be in the thousands BC. But somehow some people, like, land on this island. I guess a woman lands on this island, on a boat. And she's super pregnant, and she gives birth to twins. A woman comes out of a cave on the island and, like, delivers the twins, and then stabs the woman. And she's like, nah, I have two sons. And this is the part that I, like, absolutely had to put my face in my hands. So they name, I think the mother named one of the sons. She named the first one Jacob. The second, but she dies before naming the second son. So he just goes unnamed. And the two boys grow up together on the island being raised by this weird woman. And they like, it turns out other people already live on the island and they like watch them in secret, but they're like, those are humans. We don't want anything to do with their kind. They're evil and destructive. And we have to protect the secrets of the island from them.
So they're like, Fae?
No, they're also human. However, we do later learn that the woman is immortal. Because of the magic of the island. So it turns out that she... So they never explain the anomaly with the wheel. Except that we do see those ancient people building it. Like, they're carving the wheel that we later know will be in that cave. But we don't know... But we never see them install it. Or are given to understand how they have come to comprehend the magic of turning the wheel. Because apparently it makes the island, like, reappear somewhere else in the world.
Hmm.
So the island actually teleports around the ocean periodically, and then it also caused some kind of time distortion. We never got any explanation of what the other anomaly is, but we do at least get led to an entirely new third anomaly, which is like a spring that has like, it's just a place where water is pouring out of this like little crawls, like igloo entrance sized cave where light is shining out of it. And she's like, this is, I want to say she says it's the source of all life. What? But anyway, she takes a cup from a cup of water pouring out of the spring and feeds it to Jacob and the other boy and says, "Now you're like me." And I guess that is the ritual that makes you immortal, because Jacob ends up later doing this to Jack. So Jack becomes the immortal caretaker of the island. And then later Jack does it to Hurley. So then Hurley becomes the immortal caretaker of the island. Now you're like me. Anyway, but the other child, the nameless boy, I guess they get into some kind of like Cain and Abel fight. I don't remember exactly what they're fighting over, but Jacob hits him in the head with a rock, and he ends up like getting washed down the stream, and he goes into the light. And then he gets spat out the other side, like there's a place where the water lets out somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And then he can turn into a smoke monster. And that guy is the smoke monster. He's credited as the man in black, because he wears a black outfit. He can also shapeshift into other characters for occasionally misleading people into things or providing people with spooky visions of dead relatives in order to try and guide them in a direction. But it's clear that by season 6, his agenda is he wants to escape the island, and Jacob is trying to prevent him from escaping the island because he would wreak havoc on the world of men? Question mark? Explosion mark? I don't know. They've been on that island together for thousands of years. Meanwhile, so we're meant to believe that the man in black's scheme all along has been to, like, crash the plane to get the people here so that the guy would call the millionaire's daughter to bring the boat to get them to escape so that he could get on the boat, but then that didn't work, so now he's trying to get on a plane. And, like, I guess when they get back to the island, they actually fly there in a plane, and they actually land the plane. They manage to successfully land the plane on an airfield that they started clearing in the 70s. I wish you could see the triumphant folding of arms I made just then. If it's confusing, I have probably made it a little bit more confusing than it actually was in the show, but it's definitely very weird. And remember, all the time that we're seeing all this stuff, we're also time skipping to the parallel world where none of these people ever landed on the island, right?
Yeah.
But wait, there's a twist.
Oh, really?
A bunch of people get vindicated. A bunch of bad guys turn good. Somewhere in there is a very competent big old bear gay dude who I thought was a little micro triumph for representation of less privileged groups. Very micro, but they did it. Anyway, I'm not going to get into that. The point is that Jacob has a lighthouse from which he can see around the world and also maybe sometimes teleport places, because then a bunch of people had like flashbacks to when they were little children and Jacob visited them. All the six people who correspond to the six numbers, who were not the six that escaped the island, by the way, though a bunch of them did have to come back. That's the other thing. Jacob was bringing them there because he knew one of them was going to become his replacement, and he needed that replacement. And it had to be among those six people. So first he had Jack do it, but then he had, like, epic battle with the Man in Black, who at that point had polymorphed into Locke, so the actor who played Locke, who died in, like, season 5, could still be in the show. But when he turned himself into Locke in some way, it somehow made the transformation permanent, so he couldn't be a smoke monster anymore, so he actually could, like, have knife fights with people. And, yeah, the point is they had to prevent him from escaping. And getting on the plane. And then, like, the island was shaking itself apart and getting ready to collapse. I'm not sure exactly why. I know it wasn't the button, because that problem had already gone away. But, oh, right, they took something from the stream. Yeah, so eventually they crawl. We find out inside that crawl space that light comes out of, there's, like, an ancient shrine with a hole with a cork. And they pulled out the cork. And that caused the island to be, like, about to be destroyed. And they were like, this will somehow end all life on Earth. And so they had to crawl in there and put the cork back. But I guess Jack died? Yeah.
What?
I'm following everything he's saying. I think this is fine.
I think he's describing to me four different shows.
It sounds like... Have you ever heard, like, a second grader give a book report?
Yes! Oh, yes!
I have to... that reminds me that I have to mention the... I have to mention the submarine. So it turns out the others are still in touch with the mainland and can come and go via a submarine to the island, right? Mm-hmm. When you go, especially in the 30s, in the 70s, like, we meet a lot of new characters who came to the island as part of the Dharma Initiative, and they just, you know, were brought over there on the submarine. But it's like, okay, so one of the things they never explain is all the people on the submarine have to take a pill to go unconscious. Like, theoretically, someone is driving the submarine, but they're like, they keep being like, why do we have to be asleep for the trip? And he goes, it's just a really bumpy ride that you'll want to sleep through. That's the explanation. And they never explain why. But they do blow up the submarine with, like, a grenade at some point to keep people from leaving the island. They also never explain why the Man in Black never left the island with the submarine. Though the others did have some kind of, like, force field set up by, like, some kind of, like, sonic repulsor tower thing to keep the smoke monster out of their part of the the island. Later we also learn that he can't float across ash, which is why a circle of ash was around that shack. Okay. Anyway... And so then that's a thing. It's just very, there's a lot of going back and trying to explain stuff where, you know, a mystery is represented to us as though there's an explanation coming later. And then seasons go by and it's like, oh crap, now we have to explain this thing. And they just seem really, really ham-handed and contrived. I was especially offended though by the fact that they never named the Man in Black. Like, why couldn't you just get a name? You know? Like, so the other... So the immortal woman is happy to call Jacob, mm-hmm. but can't come up with a name for the other child. Like, it just, I didn't like that part at all. Also, there's another immortal guy on the island, who was on the ship that crashed into the Anubis statue and knocked it over, which is why it's not there in the present. That was the ship with the dynamite on it. I did like how they brought together every single thing that crashed on the island. Like, we find this old schooner, you know, this old, like, colonial age galleon. We find a plane, like, hanging in a tree. We find the hot air balloon. The crashed boat of some, like, French, surveyors who ended up crashing there earlier. So all this stuff ends up coming back later. But there's, like, ancient ruins and temples and stuff on the island, and, like, an ancient sacred order of people who protect the island, and it turns out that they overthrew the Dharma Initiative and killed them all, and then moved into their houses, and those are the others.
Oh.
Yeah.
So how does it end?
Jack saves the island, but dies in the process. He bleeds out, like, on the beach. And everyone else... I think... The of the original 40-some-odd survivors, all of them died, except for a small core of the core cast member, which includes Sawyer and Kate, who I guess get together, so, you know, the bad boy wins in this particular instance. I'm sure I'm not sure anybody else even gets out. They must get some other people out, but, like, the Korean couple definitely dies, Saeed definitely dies, Locke had died a long time ago. Hurley stayed on the island to be the new Jacob.
Where did Jacob go?
Jacob died. Jacob was killed.
The immortal person.
Yeah, he was killed by some magic. I think that maybe Benjamin killed him. He had like a special knife. I want to say something like that. That the smoke man had given him.
Right.
Here's the important part. Here's the twist. So, the flash sideways to the plane never crashed verse had been getting more and more inexplicable and making less and less sense as the season went on. Mm-hmm. And at the end, Jack goes to a funeral. And his dad, who, by the way, Jack's reason for being on the plane was he was flying his father's body from Sydney to L.A. because his father had died in Sydney and he was taking him back to L.A. So he had like a coffin with a corpse in it, right, in the back of the plane. His dad is there alive and he's like, this is so, he's like, but you died. And he's like, and then? And Jack is like, and then I died. This was in a cutscene before Jack actually died in the last episode.
Uh-huh.
And like he meets all these other characters and they start talking about the stuff that happened on the island. And that's when we realize that side verse is the afterlife where all the characters in the show will eventually die. So even the ones who weren't dead by the time the show was over were dead there. And even Hurley and Benjamin who stayed to be on the island as Hurley's, like, assistant and became immortal as well, they both eventually died, like, who knows, tens of thousands of years later. But in the afterlife, all time is simultaneous. So it was all the characters getting back together to have a big cast reunion group hug and go off into the pearly gates.
And the afterlife looks like modern day.
It looked like Earth. Los Angeles, yeah. It's different for each person. That was Jack's afterlife. That was Jack's purgatory as he moved towards.
Wait, hold on.
Being
the
able
island
to move
was
along.
His purgatory?
No. LA was. Los Angeles was his purgatory.
Oh, okay.
I think it is for a lot of people, actually.
So basically, they were like, see, the whole thing was an allegory for the human condition. Hand wave.
And that was lost.
Yes. Sorry if that was not the best. I guess we start with... We often have bumpy starts to these things.
I found it entertaining.
Very confusing.
Yeah. I find your indignant, attitude towards the whole thing. Like, they did this, and they did this, and I have no idea why they did this.
Yeah.
There's more stuff to that, too. Like, I realized another good one that I forgot was... Okay, so here's... Characters' backstories all spliced together in, like, really fascinating ways. So, for example... when we first meet Sawyer, he has a letter in his pocket, like Kate, like lifts out of his pocket, and it's a letter written by an 8-year-old to Mr. Sawyer. It's like, Mr. Sawyer, you don't know me, but I know you. You slept with my mommy and stole all my daddy's money, and then my daddy killed my mommy and himself. And one day I'm gonna find you, and I'm gonna give you this letter. So the assumption was, okay, so because Sawyer's a con man, right? We see him do this con, actually that exact con, not to those exact people, in a flashback. So we're like, okay, so the kid found him and gave him the letter, right? Mm-hmm. But it gradually becomes apparent to us, no, he wrote that letter. He calls himself Sawyer after the man who made his parents kill each other. Because he ended up in that line of work as well, but he's still carrying around the letter in case he ever finds the original Sawyer. Well, it turns out the original Sawyer is Locke's dad.
Okay.
Who conned him out of a kidney. Oh, that's another hilarious one. So like Locke is like this super awesome guy, you know, and he's like all muscle. He's this like old guy, but he's still like really built, and he's like festooned with knives. He knows how to hunt and everything. He's like super useful. But one of the things that was weird is in the very first episode, everyone's running around screaming because the plane has just crashed, and Locke like sits up, and then he stands up and he like looks up into the sky and he like begins to cry with joy at being marooned on this island. Well, we later learn in flashbacks that Locke was paralyzed. He was paralyzed from the waist down. He went to Australia from LA to go on a walkabout, but they wouldn't let him because he was in a wheelchair. They were like, this is extremely strenuous. He's like, I can do it. Don't tell me what I can't do. I'm very handy capable, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the point is, he's been in this wheelchair. So we learn that Locke is paralyzed, but then he starts having flashbacks where he's not paralyzed. And so we're waiting for them to explain how Locke got paralyzed. And we wait for that explanation for a long time. I'm pretty sure it's season 4 or 5 when we finally see when his dad pushes him out a window. But, like, it's hilarious because he, like, so he has the kidney heist, which you could see potentially having complications that would paralyze you, and he's in a car accident because of his dad, and, like, I'm pretty sure there's a third time, and, like, all this stuff that would put him in a wheelchair. Oh, and then hilariously, when he leaves the island, when he manages to escape from the island, he breaks his leg and ends up in a wheelchair. Yeah, like, so Locke's dad is Sawyer's, like, you know, art nemesis that he's trying to find. There's a point where Locke is captured by the others, by Benjamin. And Benjamin said, imagine there's a box, and you can wish for anything, and it'll give you what you wish for. What would you wish for? And Locke is like, is that a thing that exists on this island? It's like, well, the box is an analogy. He's like, okay. He's like, well, I want to show you something that came out of the box. And he takes him down the hallway and they open a door. This is in the suburban neighborhood. And they've got Locke's dad locked in a room. And he ends up being like a MacGuffin. Like, Locke wants to kill him, but he can't bring himself to do it. So he tries to put Sawyer up to it because he knows Sawyer would certainly kill this guy. But then Sawyer can't put himself up, you know, because they're like, they're not going to take a life. They never explain how he got on the island. They never explain the magic wishing box. So Locke calls it. Locke brings it up a couple of times to Benjamin. Is like, so is this another magic wishing box thing? And he's like, the box is an analogy.
So how did he get on the island?
Who knows?
What the hell?
And that's Lost.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
However, in the watching, it actually is more entertaining than I have made it sound. Because, like I said, there's a lot of cool little things. It's just that...
I would have been so frustrated. Okay, so...
Yeah.
Minute to minute... Again, this is the element I've highlighted to you. Minute to minute, the show is good. But the whole is less than the sum of its parts.
Here's the problem that I had. Like, okay, so... My ex really liked the show. And she would watch it whenever it was on. She would watch it as it was on. And so I would often be, because the room that she watched in was also my office, and so I would often be at my computer playing a video game or whatever with my headphones in. But I would catch enough of it. And it was very clear by the end of the first season that, like, yes, they had no idea what they were doing. They were just making it up as they went along.
I wouldn't say that was clear by the end of the first season, but it was certainly clear by the end of the second or third season.
Yeah, maybe it was the second season. I'm just like, this doesn't make sense, and they're just making it up, and I don't understand.
Like, part of me kind of wishes that they had picked a quarter of all of their big mysteries and stuck with them and developed those.
Yeah.
Like, the bunker system, I think, is very interesting. If they had just made the bunker be the entire thing, and, like, maybe it's connected to a little bit of other stuff, and, like, just that part. Or just the mysterious uncorking of Pandora's box, whatever the frack that was. Or just the time skipping with the magic wheel. Like, but, pick one!
But the appeal is that they could keep hooking you with these things so you keep watching, because ultimately the bunker's not going to be interesting for 6 seasons. They can't make the money, right?
They had to, it was very much a drug dealer model, where they kept hooking you on a new drug to keep you coming back for it, because the old drug, when the drug is the promise of a later mysterious reveal, you can't keep people coming back without giving them that reveal ever eventually. So you have to reveal it, and then you have to get them a new hook to be mysterious about.
Well, I understand that. I'm purely talking from it would have been a better story.
Yeah.
Perspective.
But it definitely galvanized my taste for stories that actually do keep that consistent narrative throughout.
I think we should end every episode this way with people just walking away talking.
Oh, I didn't realize there's no recording.
Yes.
This podcast is fully copyrighted by its hosts. Visit us at podcastmagicmissile.com. iPodcast Magic Missile, attacking the darkness since 2012.